You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, yeah. I'm liking the bumps. Okay. All right.
This song, and listen.
All right.
When we were growing up, Eminem, to stick in the same vein of the conversation we were just having about Cartoon Network and nostalgia and things, Eminem, back when we were growing up, that was like his peak, right?
Like, it's like the 03 to like 08 run.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit further. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was in every like sports hype-up video, sports like warm-up. Everything was,
yeah.
He was like the top. And this song, this new song from him, Houdini, just brings me right back to it.
Brings you back.
I heard
brings
it.
You back.
Like, I heard it like a week ago, like fully. And I was like, man, this sounds like it came out like in his peak.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know what changed, but he went right back to it. And it was just like, okay,
that's right.
Great.
I'm in a weird spot now, Josh. We had 5-minute break, and now I just want to go watch cartoons. We just finished up with Joe and Sal today. You guys finished up talking about Cartoon Network, and now all I want to do is go home and watch Codename Kids Next Door, Powerpuff Girls, because it is a good show. Well, I'm telling you, Josh, watch it as a 20-something.
I just didn't like it.
That's fair. That's fair. But like, go home and watch like 6 episodes as a 20-something.
To be fair,
it's a good cartoon.
To be fair, like watching old cartoons, whatever the show, like now that we're adults, there were so many hidden jokes.
Well, there's hidden jokes, but also there's stuff where you're like, oh, that's like just a good reference.
Right.
I'm surprised you guys got that like through, like with like me not catching it even as a kid.
Yeah. Or like some of these shows like had good plot lines too.
Oh, yeah.
Of just like, you know, hey, this is a crazy part of the story. Like, what's about to happen? You know?
There's also, I mean, I was talking with Joe Calley during the break. He's doing traffic this morning, and we didn't know like where it was, but we were both talking about Batman the Animated Series with Kevin Conroy being the voice.
Yeah,
who he recently passed away. But
I just saw something about that.
Still to this day, the best Batman ever.
See,
Batman the Animated Series going into Batman Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
I was
so good.
Always a Marvel kid. So
I'm a DC guy.
I never really got into Batman. I watched Teen Titans. That was a good show.
Teen Titans is awesome.
I liked that. I didn't really understand it, but I thought it was funny.
Oh, man.
Like, I didn't really get the show at all. But, like, I remember, like, every morning before going to school, like, I would get up really, not really early, but, like, I was, like, one of the first kids on the bus in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be up early enough to watch Boomerang, and Boomerang would have on Looney Tunes and then Tom and Jerry.
Yep.
And as I was getting on the bus, Tom and Jerry would be ending. So it was like this nice little, like, every morning I got Saturday morning cartoons, which was just awesome. As like looking back, like, it was just peak morning entertainment.
Right. And it's one of those where, like, no one tells you it's the good old days.
Until you're looking back and saying, man.
Realizing the good old days are when you're like
happened?
9.
Yeah,
before
right.
School.
Right.
Favorite cartoon, 803-0550? No.
Hey, and if you want to, if you call in for other stuff, if you want to throw out your favorite cartoon, go ahead.
All for it. But yeah, Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. I do, though, want to take a point from the morning show today, because that's kind of where I wanted to come in this morning after listening to Doug Farrar yesterday on One Bills Live. I want to talk more about wide receivers, and it's because Doug is kind of taking the point that I've kind of been a part of for a little while here, which is like I've kind of coined it, I guess, for at least me personally, the Green Bay model and how they've built their wide receiver core, drafting a lot of guys just kind of all around, not really leaving a draft without getting a skill position player that can catch passes. And it has kind of brought it to round, because I know the morning show was talking like, would you be happy if Keon Coleman was as good as Gabe Davis? Spoiler alert, I would not be. But
I'm in the same boat. I just don't think it would be a good, like, yes, Gabe Davis was good, but I expect Keon Coleman to be better.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to necessarily.
Gabe Davis was good for the value you got him at. He was a fourth round pick, and he came in his rookie year and was really good, but he never really
surpassed
what he was as a rookie.
He was a bridge guy for this team. In Jacksonville, I think he's going to be a great, you know, 2B kind of guy.
See, I don't know. I think people are going to constantly be frustrated by him.
Oh, really?
Because you're going to have those pop games, and then he's going to disappear and have, like, a catch for 3 weeks. And that's...
Yeah, but that's kind of also, like, I think he's, like, a step above a role player. Because, like, role players, like, you look at them and they're like, oh, you know, like, they have good games every once in a while. They step up when they're needed. It's almost like depth scoring in hockey when we look at, you know, like second or third line scoring rather than, you know, the first line's always popping. Mm-hmm. When I look at Gabe Davis, I see him as just a bit above a role player, but not, obviously not quite a star.
Yeah.
He's like that weird middle ground where it's like, yeah, he's going to give you good games, but he's going to give you enough of them where you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. And you're going to constantly be frustrated with, man, we paid him a lot of money and he's not doing enough for us.
And he's not doing enough.
And it's not like he's, because then it's not like he's not a good player, but it's also not like he's worth the money you're getting him for. Like
he is going to be a player in Jacksonville especially. And he didn't even get a ton of money in Jacksonville necessarily.
But
it's always going to be, people look at his contract and go, we could be doing so much better with like a younger first round pick. I mean, Jacksonville themselves did draft Brian Thomas Jr. They lost Calvin Ridley, but it could be something along the lines of kind of what Bills fans were at, which is just, can we go draft somebody? It'll be better. We will be better. Now, on that point, and where I want to talk about today, and 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show, is I just don't think the Bills need a number one wide receiver. When I look around the NFL, it does not seem to me at least, that you need a number one to win. And when I do say number one, I do mean those higher echelon guys. You know, Stephon Diggs for his first 2-3 years in Buffalo was. He was a top five wide receiver in the league. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Devontae Adams in his prime kind of deal. Those are the number ones. Tyreek Hill now. Those are the number one wide receivers that you build your offense around. And to that point, and to Doug's point yesterday on One Bills Live, is that actually better to so heavily involve your offense around a single skill position player? Because when they eventually don't become the Justin Jeffersons, the Jamar Chases of the world, you've put in so much money into one position that, like running back, does devalue quite quickly. We're already talking about it with Stephon Diggs, maybe not being thrilled that they didn't get a pick this year, but that, hey, he's, you know, on the opposite end of 30. Maybe that's not great for us going forward. Maybe we do get out a year early. We kind of do the whole, you know, Patriots thing of old where, you know, they always seem to get out of a player, you know, a year before he fell off. Even if, you know, the media at the time would tell you, oh, what are they doing? Why aren't they keeping him, the whole thing? I would say even the Chiefs have done it, trading Tyreek Hill. Now, they have tried to and failed in recent years of filling that role that Hill has left. Hill is still a great wide receiver. They did probably get rid of him too soon, but they were not willing at the time, it seems, to put in massive amounts of money into one wide receiver. Doug even said this yesterday as well. The defense is kind of why the Chiefs were not only a playoff team, but won the Super Bowl, not their offense. Their offense was at times last year bad. They could not score. And it was a constant issue throughout the year, really until the playoffs, where Marquez Valdes-Scantling seemed to catch everything. Travis Kelce was back to where he was before, and they were able to continue to move forward. It was still able to work really, really well. But they keep going to the well of the draft. They've tried Sky Moore. They've drafted Rashee Rice. This year, they've drafted Xavier Worthy. They keep going back to the well, trying to get young wide receivers. So I think that they eventually don't have to pay guys. They will have the next group coming up. You look at a team like Cincinnati, who already kind of feels like they're being gutted. They paid Joe Burrow, and this is partially Cincinnati's way of doing things, but they paid Joe Burrow, but they lost their two starting safeties. Massively hurt them. Now, Boyd's gone, and we're all kind of expecting T. Higgins to eventually be gone. They're not going to pay him massive money. So it is going to be Burrow to Chase. And you hope guys like Jermaine Burton, who they drafted this year, works out well. You hope that these guys that they keep drafting work out well, but eventually you do have misses in the draft. Look at the Chiefs now. They've hit on defense. They've not really hit on offense very recently. The Bills, kind of the same thing. The Bills have had their hit and misses throughout the drafts. Some have been great. I love what Terrell Bernard's become just through 2 years. You know, of course, you have Matt Milano in the fifth round, stuff like that, but they've also had misses. Cody Ford recently, or well, somewhat recently. Kyrie Elam, we'll see what that's going to become at this point. And so I do look at it and go, maybe it is better to just do what Green Bay kind of is doing. I don't want to make it sound like they're the only team that's doing this, because as I brought up, Kansas City kind of keeps going to the well of just, let's go get guys that fit our system. You look at their team now, it's just a bunch of fast guys. They go and get Hollywood Brown and Xavier Worthy this year. It's a ton of speed guys. With Buffalo, it's a lot more size now. Keon Coleman is a big guy. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, yes, is fast, but he's 6'4".
Dalton Kincaid.
I mean, he's tight end, but yeah, 6'4".
Well, I'm thinking, again, like we've talked all offseason, it's like the receivers, I view Kincaid as a receiver.
Right? Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, even though he's a tight end, I view him as a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
But I see what you're saying. With all the other actual wide receivers, they're very tall.
And outside of Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir. Well, yeah. And even Shakir, for a slot guy being 6 foot, 6'1", it's kind of big for a slot guy.
Yeah, right, because Cole Beasley was
5'8".
5'8", yeah,
5'9".
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, and Curtis Samuel is around there, too.
5'11"-ish.
Yeah, so it's like, but those guys are your gadget guys. I mean, we've kind of talked about that with Samuel, especially, with what he's done in Carolina and Washington. He was kind of a gadget guy where it's like, do everything and anything except for the deep ball. And you have three, four other guys that can catch deep balls.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested looking at it because, and I said it yesterday too, like you look at the Bills wide receiver depth chart and it kind of makes you question everything. You start looking at it and you're like, is this the right idea? Are we sure about this? Like, and even with Stephon Diggs, I think you'd maybe look around and kind of go, all right, like if Diggs is back to being Diggs, cool. But if not, ugh. You know, yeah. You look at the Houston team he's on now. I think that's why people are comfortable to be like, yeah, he's going to be the third overall wide receiver because it's Nico Collins and Tank Dell.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, like, yeah, Diggs can have his role and be fine.
I think, too, also, if Diggs was still on this team, we would be sitting here worrying about, oh, if Diggs isn't there, what's this team going to look like? But since he's gone, I think that's out of all of our minds of like, okay, there's nothing, like, we can't even think about that. We don't have to worry about that. So we're kind of all convincing ourselves like, yeah, it'll be fine. Everything will be fine. And, you know, if it's not, well, it's because they don't have a number one wide receiver. It's not because a guy on your team that you're paying a lot of money to isn't performing. It's just because you don't have that guy.
Yeah.
And which I think, honestly, I kind of feel better about that because then you're not wasting money. You're just waiting for that one piece.
For me, it's constantly the contracts. It's the contracts I'm seeing dished out that I just... That is going to, I think, bite a lot of teams in the you-know-what. Like Minnesota with Justin Jefferson.
Ooh,
if J.J. McCarthy does not hit, what does it matter that Justin Jefferson is the highest paid player in football? That, you know, yes, he's putting a lot of bums in seats. I get it. But what does it ultimately mean? His playoff numbers aren't even that great. And he's only been in, I think, one playoff game in his career. No fault to his own. But... Wide receiver, yes, it's an important position. It has not overtaken quarterback or it has not equaled quarterback. As long as you have the quarterback in place, look at Kansas City last year. Could not score. Still was one of the top three seeds in the AFC.
Wide receiver
go on a run.
Wide receiver is the new running back. Like it's taken over in that sense because if you think about like 2000 to now or even 2000 to like 2016, it was star running backs, and then you obviously had your star wide receivers, but they weren't this, you know, if you don't have a star wide receiver, you'll still be okay because you'll have a star running back. Like, think about the Marshawn Lynches, the LeSean McCoys, the Todd Gurley.
I was going to say, if we're going like through 2000s, like Jamal Lewis was like the offense on the 2000 Ravens.
I can't go back that far.
Yeah. Sean Alexander for Seattle. Adrian Peterson, his 2,000-yard rushing season.
Yeah.
I think
Dalvin Cook at points too.
Yeah. I think you're not there yet because running backs, it was you had like 3-4 years where they were truly great and then it went downhill and they weren't as efficient.
But if you think about it, with some of these wide receivers now, you technically have quote unquote 3 or 4 years on your team. They just might
leave.
Before
you're paying them, yeah.
Well, they just might leave because you can't pay them.
Yeah.
Whereas with running backs, obviously it was 3 or 4 years and then, oh man, they're toast.
Well, it's their toast, but even during their prime years, they're not as efficient. And along with that, it's only one guy touching the rock. That's it.
Yeah.
With wide receivers, you're having 3-4 guys potentially on a field.
Yeah. You can't have four elite running backs. You can't have four elite wide receivers really either unless they're all rookies or second-year players that just happen to all pop off at the same mm-hmm. time. But with I see what you're saying. You have more variety.
There's more variety, and I think that's why the value of the position, for me at least right now, is not as high as it would be for somebody like me. I love the wide receiver position. I have mm-hmm. a blast watching it. It's my favorite position in football. It's part of the reason why I like football as much as I do. It's the wide receiver position. My thing is if I'm building a team, I'm not making one of my wide receivers the second highest paid player on my team. I can't do it. Unless it's Jerry Rice or Randy Moss.
Or a player of that caliber.
I'm not doing it. Yeah, like, but I even have a tough time with guys like Justin Jefferson, because ultimately when Jefferson got hurt, Minnesota won games. It went from Kirk Cousins is down, Justin Jefferson's down, cool, we're tanking for Caleb or Drake, to they've won four of the last six. It's not that valuable a position, especially, and this is maybe where it's a little bit different for the Bills, if you have a very good offensive play caller. Look at what Kansas City is able to do with Andy Reid, maybe the greatest play caller of all time, with a bunch of essentially what we all think is garbage at wide receiver.
Right.
They have a guy in Kadarius Toney who can't line up correctly. A guy like Sky Moore, who was a second-round pick, has basically never seen the football field since being drafted by Kansas City.
Granted, they do have probably the best tight end of all time.
Absolutely, and that's been a big thing that I've touted this offseason, that I think tight ends are becoming more valuable, or a great tight end is more valuable than a great wide receiver.
When are we going to have a conversation like, if any other tight end was there, would we see the same success? Because when Travis Kelce got hurt, Noah Gray was still a big part of their offense, and he didn't do that bad. He had his moments where, obviously, he's not putting up Travis Kelce numbers, but he's still putting up impressive numbers for a tight end.
Well, I think that is where, like, it's still a good play caller. He's going to get people involved.
Yeah.
For me, though, Travis Kelce is the greatest tight end of all time.
Do you think he'd still be this good on any other team?
Arguably, maybe? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I think as a receiving tight end, he is mm-hmm. truly different.
Even if you put him on, like, the Bears. Obviously, like,
I mean, Cole Kmet's pretty darn good. And they've been bad the last few years.
Obviously, situations are like, you know, if you have to have a good quarterback, because mm-hmm. if you don't have a good quarterback, it doesn't matter how good your receivers, your tight ends, even maybe your running backs are.
Yeah.
If your quarterback is bad, the rest of your team will look bad, mm-hmm. no matter how good the rest of the players are. But I just wonder how much of Travis Kelce's success will be on Andy Reid.
I mean, but I think you can make that argument for anybody, like situationally in any sport. If you land in the bad situation, you're screwed. Like, you mm-hmm. got to hope and pray, tread water, and hope you outlast bad coaching or what have you.
Well, if we're saying that he's the best player of all time, though, or best tight end of all time, mm-hmm. right? Why can't we look at, like, other players that are, quote-unquote, best of all time in their sport or position or top players in their sports and say, hey, they were in a bad... Like, Connor McDavid. Obviously, Travis Kelce is not on the level of Connor McDavid, but he's one of the best players of the sport, and he's in a bad situation, but he pulls his team through it. And I get it. It's a different sport. It works mm-hmm. differently, but, you know, good players find a way to win. Doesn't matter if they're in a bad situation. So I just wonder if he was in a worse situation. And he didn't have Patrick Mahomes his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
So he was
putting up great numbers with Alex Smith.
Okay. Maybe I'm talking myself out of my own point. Never mind. I retract my statement. I talked myself into a circle where I realized that I was, in fact, wrong.
But ultimately, the point is, on the tight end point, I think a great tight end equals more than mm-hmm. a great wide receiver. I think wide receivers, I don't want to say it's the dime a dozen. They are a valuable position. But I think what I've seen with how the Bills are building up their team, and I think how Kansas City is building up theirs and how Green Bay is building up theirs, they don't want to get stuck into a big-time contract. They don't want to be where Miami is, where they've traded or they've paid Waddle and Hill, and now we're staring down a Tua contract going, I don't love that. And also, we've lost a ton of our defensive depth, a unit that wasn't very good anyways. Or you look at a team like Minnesota, where they're praying to everything they know that J.J. McCarthy works out to the point where they are using kid gloves on him. Sam Darnold is going to start the year, no doubt in my mind, to move forward there. I would say maybe the one team that's going a little bit out of here is that Chicago. They traded for DJ Moore to give themselves a really good wide receiver, but then they did also go out and draft Aroma Dunze. They are, I think, setting themselves up for when DJ Moore's contract is up, he's gone, and they just keep Adunze. And they try to kind of have, you know, resources around the team. They've been bad for years. I think that would be the correct way to go about it. But for these three, 4 years, have Williams with two truly great wide receivers, along with Cole Kmet and such. I think Chicago's a great build. But when I do look at the Bills, it's just, it has not been proven in the NFL that you do need an elite wide receiver, a number one wide receiver, to win a Super Bowl. Kansas City's a bit of an outlier. They did have Tyreek Hill for one of the Super Bowls. They also, though, have won two since he's gone. So they, if anything, kind of deprove you need so. When you, when you go to the Patriots, when they had Randy Moss, they didn't win a Super Bowl for 10 years.
What about when you look at, like, let's say Tampa Bay with Tom Brady?
Tampa Bay, Mike Evans. I think people would argue Mike Evans is probably an elite number one wide receiver, especially in his prime.
That was going to be my question. Is he in that same tier as quote unquote elite number one receivers?
I think he's horribly underrated, which is surprising. He's never had under 1,000 yards, and he has multiple double digit touchdown seasons.
I think it's because people think, oh, that's just because he's incredibly consistent. Right, like I don't think it's because of
he's never been, like, in the argument of having a 2,000 yard season.
Yeah, and I just don't think he's in the, people look at him talent wise of, well, Justin Jefferson has elite speed, or Tyreek Hill has elite speed. Mike Evans doesn't really have that, but he just has the ability to catch the ball and get to where he needs to be, and that's just like being a consistent player, but not being like a standout.
Yeah. Now, one interesting one from a few years ago. Cooper Kupp with the LA Rams. Would you count him as a truly elite wide receiver?
No.
I think there's arguments to yes, but it's been very, like, Cooper Kupp is a very good wide receiver and has had flashes of brilliance, namely his 2021 season. 191 targets, 145 catches, almost 2,000 yards, and 16 touchdowns. He truly was amazing in that season.
But in 2019, he had 1,100 yards.
Well, and that could also be the quarterback change, right?
True.
That's the change to Stafford.
Yep.
Now, in the last 2 years, he's dealt with injuries, so we haven't really been able to see what Cooper Kupp was at his prime. You know, in 2022, nine games started, 75 catches, 812 yards, and six touchdowns. Last year, 12 games started, 59 catches, just over 700 yards, and five touchdowns.
I think at the end of his career, he won't be considered this. And what was an elite number one receiver because
he'll be kind of like Michael Thomas.
Yeah, because of the injuries. If you look back at it, in 2017, obviously didn't have any injuries, but that was his rookie year. Who's their quarterback? Was that Jared Goff still?
That would have been Jared Goff at that time, yeah.
So 869 yards. Next season, starts eight games, plays eight games, so must be injury that year. I don't really remember Cooper Kupp in 2018. But he only has 566 yards. 2019, he gets Matthew Stafford, goes up over 1,000 for the first time. 2020 regresses a little bit, has some, maybe some injuries in there. I can't really tell. 974 yards. And then obviously the big season of the 1,900 yards was in 2021 when they won the Super Bowl. So it's, and then obviously the last 2 years has been injuries. So I look at him and it's like, yeah, he had his moment of dominance, but I don't think he was ever a number one.
Even then, though,
an elite number one.
I don't know. Cooper Kupp is the one that I was thinking about this morning that had me kind of stuck, because it's only been a few years where you can say, okay, he's been a top five wide receiver in football. And that playoff year, the year they win the Super Bowl, he is dominant in the playoffs in four games. 42 targets, 33 catches, just under 500 yards, and six touchdowns.
Which is incredible.
In the NFC Championship game, he is targeted 14 times, has 11 catches, 142 yards, and two touchdowns. And then in the Super Bowl, after Odell Beckham Jr. goes down, by the way, so now it's more on him, 10 targets, 8 catches, 92 yards, and two touchdowns. He's the one where I'm like, okay, that works. But they do have Sean McVay as offensive coordinator, head coach. So there is kind of this feeling. And along with that, I think Cooper Kupp has kind of had this little bit of a downward spiral in terms of like how people perceive him, because Puka Nacua comes in his rookie year when he's hurt and has the greatest rookie season a receiver's ever had,
again,
or one of them.
The recurring theme here is he gets hurt. And I think if he can stay healthy, or if he could have stayed healthy, I'm not saying he can't, you know, come back to dominance, but he is going to be 31. But if he would have stayed healthy for his whole career, I think then he would probably have been considered an elite number one, because you wouldn't have had those weird years of regression, and he would have maybe progressed better and got to that 1900 yard season sooner.
19,000 would have been crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's possible. But imagine the quarterback. Receiver has 19,000. No, but I just think that you look at a guy like him. Yes, he's an elite receiver, but he's not in the group of like he's a top receiver. He's not an elite receiver.
Yeah, and even I look at some of these earlier teams, you know, going to the greatest show on turf Rams or the the Colts team that won in 06. These are teams that had multiple wide receivers, multiple really good players, not just one. It wasn't just for Isaac Bruce for the greatest show on turf or just Marvin Harrison for the Colts. It was, you know, you also had Reggie Wayne. You also had Torrey Holt. And that's how they were able to make it work, was having multiple guys. Having that one dude plus the quarterback, it feels right. It doesn't always mean greatness. Joe Montana won Super Bowls before he got Jerry Rice. It doesn't always mean greatness. And I guess that's where I'm coming to. Like, here, perfect example. Tom Brady and Randy Moss should have won 10 Super Bowls. Greatest quarterback, potentially greatest wide receiver. Near their primes, they didn't win a single one together. They made the game, don't get me wrong. They didn't win them. And they were in a bad AFC at the time. An AFC that was basically run by three teams, and that was about it. Patriots, Colts, sometimes the Chargers, and predominantly the Steelers. That's what Brady had to go through every single time. You look at a much tougher AFC now, at least in terms of top to bottom, I'd much rather have a team where week to week, game to game, teams don't know what receiver, what option is going to actually kill us today. Or what we should actually be focusing on.
That's what the Bills had in 2021.
In the Bills, well, it was a little bit like that in 21 with John Brown and Cole Beasley also. And I think that's when they were at their best, was when they had 2 to 3 really good wide receivers. We actually haven't gotten back to that point in so long. It's been a while.
At that point in time, you didn't know what Diggs was either, really.
Well, and you kind of did. I mean, he had been a 1,000-yard guy, 100-catch guy.
But like,
you didn't realize he was going to be 1,400-yard guy.
Exactly. That's the point I was getting to there, is that you... That going into that season, teams didn't realize what he was going to be, and in terms of how much he was going to pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that paired with Cole Beasley, John Brown, and even who else was there that year? I'm blanking on the last of the big four.
Well, Davis comes in for the Emmanuel Sanders year.
True, yeah. But just those three, though, like Diggs, Beasley, Brown, that was a three-headed dragon that just didn't matter who got the ball. They were going to compete.
And I think that's been the Bills' biggest problems on offense, is when they get into these playoff games, these playoff losses specifically, they have not had Stephon Diggs to be that main guy. He has not been the main guy. Oftentimes, he has had to play second fiddle to someone else going off or trying to go off, namely Gabe Davis. Obviously, 13 seconds being the main one, but even some of these last few years, it's been another guy having to kind of carry the load a little bit here. And I think that's where the Bills are trying to get to, is give us consistent receivers that are going to get open for Josh Allen and let us work from there. And I think that is the correct way to go for the league moving forward, is to not pay, oh my God, money to a top-tier wide receiver unless, you know, you've drafted him and you have cheap years there. It's not to chase that. It is to build through your own and have multiple guys, multiple cheap guys who are consistent. And that's how you build a consistent winner. I do want to go through some of these Super Bowl champions. We got to take a quick time out. If you want to join the show, 803-0550 is the number to call. Do the Bills need a number one wide receiver to be successful? We've also got some tweets as well. We'll read those after a quick time out. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show right here on WGR.